AFAstreaming.afa.net has now become AFA Stream, and you can find it at stream.afa.net. You see, we removed the letters ING. Our experts have determined that eliminating those three keystrokes, multiplied over hundreds of thousands of AFA Stream visits, could reduce the national debt and maybe increase the gross domestic product. AFA Stream, formerly streaming.afa.net. Improvements to the economy are purely theoretical. Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. So glad you're with me. Today is Friday, and it's always exciting when it's Friday. My Friday always is involved with, or I am involved with sermon preparation. So I do preparation for the program, and then I go home, and then I work on my sermon for Sunday, and hopefully get done in the afternoon so I can have time with my wife or time to play golf or do something like that. So Friday's always a fun, special day. And I'm glad that you have joined us today because we're going to talk about something that is very, very important in today's world in which we live. You know, it's almost like you open up the your news source, whatever that might be, and you read. It's not out of the ordinary to read about another church scandal, another pastor fell, another church leader did this, that, or the other that was very unsavory. The Bible tells us in Ephesians chapter 5, therefore be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil, and the evil one is out to steal and kill and destroy. Well, there's a brand new book out that we're going to talk about today. It's called Church on Trial, How to Protect Your Congregation, Mission, and Reputation During a Crisis. And the crux of the book is how an organization or a church or a ministry can recover and rebound even from a terrible crisis. The author is my friend, Dr. Phil Cook. And Dr. Phil Cook is co-founder and CEO of Cook Media Group, as well as the nonprofit The Influence Lab. And Phil has produced media programming in nearly 70 countries and created many of the most influential and inspirational TV programs in history, with a client list that includes Hollywood studios, major nonprofit organizations, and many of the world's most respected churches and ministries. Phil is considered by many, especially in Christian circles, as the media guru, the media go-to guy, because he has much wisdom, and it's a privilege for me to have him on the program and to call him my friend. So, Phil, welcome to Real Truth for Today.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm honored to be here. This will be fun. I'm always excited when we're together.
Well, I appreciate that. So, okay, first things first. You have left Burbank, California for Nashville, Tennessee. That's a huge move. Tell me why you did that.
Yeah, I spent most of my career in Los Angeles. I moved there in 91, and we set up our company, raised our daughters there. And there are a couple things. We wanted to expand into the Nashville market. So much production media-wise, particularly in the Christian world, is happening in places like Nashville and Atlanta and Dallas. So we really wanted to expand into that world. And, it's not a terrible thing to leave the Communist Republic of California. honestly, I don't know how politicians could mess up such a perfect state. I mean, when you look at California, the climate, the mountains, the ocean, it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous, wonderful place. And we've loved it all these years. But the policies and the politics are just getting insane out there. And so one of the reasons we came here was our daughter and son-in-law kidnapped our grandkids and moved here 2 years ago. And they were concerned about the kids' schools and issues like that. So they came here. They love it. They have no intention of coming back. So we decided we'll follow the grandkids, maybe set up a new presence for our company, Cook Media Group, here in Nashville, and see what happens.
Well, that sounds like a good plan. I was just kind of curious because we hear so many terrible things, and I agree with you. California, I was born in California, lived there until I was in seventh grade, a beautiful state, but it's just being ruined by liberal policies. Was it difficult, Phil, to sell your business or sell the building and sell your house?
It's funny. People are still moving in. We sold the building. We owned the building for our production company, but I sold that right after the pandemic. I was concerned that, as has happened, a lot of people do not want to come back to work. They like working from home. I sent everyone home during the pandemic for our company, and we love it. I love getting up and going into my office in my pajamas in the morning. I have no issue with that at all. So we decided to sell the building, and then when we put the house on the market, it took longer than we thought, but because I think people are starting to realize it's staggering the number of major companies that are leaving California. That's the amazing thing to me. They're letting these huge companies leave California because of the tax policies, because of all the diversity initiatives and things like that. So I think it's just we're seeing a state in transition, and I don't know if it will recover or not.
You know, it's funny, and you probably saw this when Ron DeSantis debated Gavin Newsom, and they were talking about their respective states. And I watched that and I said, I think Gavin Newsom is auditioning for the role of the Antichrist. Everything that came out of his mouth was a lie. It's like, hey, no. How stupid do you think we are? How do you not see what's going on in your state? Surely he's not that dumb. He's just lying through his teeth.
Well, the amazing thing is he can lie and keep a straight face and smile. It's just, it's like a second language. And it's really an interesting thing how that works. But you're right. He was humiliated in front of, Ron during the debate. And everything he said was wrong. And yet people still buy into that. It was interesting that I asked on social media last year, I said, look, you know, with the rising cost, gas is double what it is everywhere else. The cost of living is double or triple. Cost of food is skyrocketing. I said, all these issues are so big. Why do people continue to vote Democratic? And a number of people, surprising number of people said, yes, but I'm willing to pay that price to live in a state that's LGBTQ friendly, that lets us have pride parades and drag queens talk to our kids in school. And there's a lot of people apparently that really dig that. And it's shocking, but there are. The world has changed. And so I guess they will continue to migrate to California because that's a real mecca. If you're that far left, California is the place to be.
Yeah. Well, let's get to your book, Phil, Church on Trial, How to Protect Your Congregation, Mission, and Reputation During a Crisis. This is a timely, timely book. How long did it take you to put it together?
Well, it's taken a couple of decades, actually. You know, early in my media career, and I'm known as a media producer, as you know, Jeff, but early in my career, I started getting calls from churches that were in a crisis for a variety of reasons. You know, it's not just moral failure on the part of pastors or other leaders. It's financial issues, embezzlement, things like that. I saw a study recently that embezzlement in churches in America adds up to more than $1 billion a year. That's staggering. Wow. Think of what we could do for the gospel with that kind of money. And sometimes it's outside pressure. You know, somebody decides to launch a blog or a Facebook page against your church. Or maybe they're having cancel culture protests. It's a wide range of things. And they just didn't know, how do we communicate that? Do we need an attorney? Do we release a press statement? Do we talk to the press? They just had a million questions. And they started calling me, and I started helping. And over the years, I've worked with just a great number of churches, helping them kind of navigate these kind of crisis situations. And I eventually thought, you know what? Maybe I need to put all the things I've learned over these years into a book so that every pastor, leader, elder could have this on his desk so that when a crisis comes, they'll know what to do. I talk about in the book that in the digital social media world we live in today, it's not if you'll have a crisis, it's when you'll have a crisis. There's just so many opportunities for someone on your staff to say something inappropriate, do something stupid, you know, just do something you'll regret. And so knowing how to deal and respond correctly. In fact, I'll tell you, Jeff, I mentioned in the book that one study indicates that more than 27% of people who leave the church leave because of a crisis or how poorly the church handled the crisis. And they're not leaving to go to another church. They're leaving the faith entirely. They've been so turned off by the crisis in a church or how poorly the church handled it that they've just decided to walk away from the church altogether. So this is a really serious issue, and we need to figure this out.
You know, one of the things that you talk about early on in the book, in part one, about culture, and culture is critical, in my view, as the old saying goes, culture eats strategy for breakfast. Phil, one of the things that that I've noticed, especially with larger ministries and pastors that, that pastor big churches, they can become very insulated, very isolated from the people. They can be very dictatorial in how they do things. You know, you think about guys that had a major meltdown, James McDonald, Mark Driscoll, these powerful leaders, but they're just running people over. I think it was Paul David Tripp that said when he was called in for the Mars Hill disaster, he said he had never been around such a toxic culture. You know so many pastors, and you deal with so many churches and nonprofits and large ones. What do you see with that? Do you see this kind of, hey, I'm larger than life, so I can do whatever I want?
I've certainly seen it over the years quite a bit. It's interesting that I believe very strongly that culture is more important than vision. You know, a lot of Christian leaders have a great vision. They've, you know, they really are inspired to do amazing things, but their culture they've created is toxic. It's just terrible. You walk on the campus and you feel the distrust and the backbiting and the criticism, and it's just a horrible, you actually can, it's palpable. You can feel it. And I would much rather have a church or a ministry that had an amazing culture, an inspiring culture, a motivating culture, because even if they don't have a vision, something is going to come out of that kind of culture. Something amazing is going to happen. So I do see a lot of pastors that, and, you know, in many ways, these pastors of large churches started the church. I find, you know, very, very often they started the church in their living room with three or four people. Now it's grown to 5,000, 10,000, even 15,000 or more. And so it's been their show. They've always run the show. They've, you know, they kind of feel like this is my baby. And so I can see where they start to feel like, okay, I should be telling people what to do. This is my vision. And, you know, I grew this church from nothing. But we just can't approach it that way. We have to have a much more vibrant, creative, open culture if we're going to be effective in sharing the gospel with the world.
Yeah, you know, Phil, what I've admired about you is you're always kind to people. I've watched you in different settings, and you know, you're very well known, and at the NRB you're like NRB royalty, National Religious Broadcasters Commission. But you always you were always kind to me when I was a, you know, still a nobody, but you know what I'm saying, as opposed to some guys that have an entourage and you can't get close to them. And I always think it speaks volumes about a leader when he's just kind and approachable to everybody. I love that about Jack Graham. I know you work very closely with Jack Graham.
Yeah,
Jack's just a good guy.
Jack's amazing in that respect. I mean, he goes to ball games. He's just a regular, normal guy. You know, and it, every time I've worked with Jack and his team for a number of years, and they every time I go, they want to go out to eat. Let's go find a good new barbecue place. You know, they're just normal human beings. I love them. Now, and I have to say, my pastor for many, many years in Los Angeles was Jack Hayford, Church on the Way in Los Angeles, and Jack Hayford was the perfect model of that. I mean, he was just the most regular, normal human being I've ever met. And so that really modeled for me. I mean, Jack, as far as I'm concerned, is the Protestant Pope. I mean, he bridges all gaps. He talks to Protestants, Catholics. He talks to everybody. And when he was in ministry, when he was alive, he just was a remarkable model for me. And it really taught me that you don't need an entourage. You don't need somebody carrying your Bible and your cell phone up to the pulpit. You don't need a security escort. He would just, and another one, you know, is John Osteen in Texas, in Houston, Joel Osteen's dad. John would just, at the end of a message, he would wade right into the crowd and meet people and talk to them and hug, and he'd hang out after service for more than an hour just meeting people and talking. I just love leaders that are transparent and that want to engage with people. That really says so much about who they are and what they're about.
Amen. I had Richard Blackaby on the program, Phil, some months back, and he said his dad would much rather just mingle with the people than go to the highfalutin, you know, party, after party, so to speak, with you know, well-known people, because he just considered himself a regular guy and he wanted to minister to the regular people. Well, we're talking to Dr. Phil Cook, and his brand new book is called Church on Trial: How to Protect Your Congregation, Mission, and Reputation During a Crisis. And Phil makes the statement that, hey, if you're around long enough, probably something is going to come up, so you need to have a strategy for what to do when crisis hits. You're listening to Real Truth for Today, and I'm your host, Pastor Jeff Shreve, and we're up against a break, but we'll be right back. Don't go away. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show. That's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you. We need to save them. That's why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on you and me. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies. And that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or 140 helps rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't either. Together, you and I can save lives. Just call #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's 250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at afr.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back. We're talking to Dr. Phil Cook. His brand new book is called Church on Trial: How to Protect Your Congregation, Mission, and Reputation During a Crisis. And the crux of the book is how an organization can recover and rebound even from a crisis. Now, Phil, you talk about a one-time crisis versus a culture of abuse. And so for our listeners, if you can be a little specific, what would you use it as an example for a one-time crisis versus a culture of abuse?
Well, very often a church is doing great and they just happen to have one situation that pops up. It could be an outside situation, a critic on the outside making a big stink, or maybe a media reporter criticizing the church. It could be, you know, a youth leader spending a little too much time with that young minor in the youth group. It could be any number of things, but it's a one-time deal. It pops up and it needs to be taken care of. If there's a victim involved, they need to be immediately taken care of. But there are other situations we've seen in the press recently where suddenly we find multiple leaders in the church have been accused of maybe moral wrongdoing or financial wrongdoing. We've seen abusive cases that went on for years and years and years. So there have been some cultures where, and in my opinion, it might, you know, put it this way, Jeff, my goal in the book is to help churches survive and thrive. So even if the senior pastor, even if a youth leader, even another major leader in the church has a sexual abuse situation or embezzlement situation, some other problem, I want to help the church figure out how do we get through this and get to the other side. However, in cases of multiple situations, in cases of ongoing abuse or wrongdoing, I think there's sometimes when a church just needs to shut down and start all over. We've seen that recently with IHOP, the International House of Prayer in Kansas City. We've seen it with other churches around the country where it was just so abusive, so bad for so long that it's just really impossible to win back the people's trust anymore. And that's a terrible, terrible situation. I mean, fortunately that it doesn't happen very often, but it does occasionally. And so I think that's another reason why the earlier we can intervene. You know, one of the things I talk about in the book, Jeff, is red flags. I think one of the biggest things, you know, we're Christians. We want to think the best of everybody. So very often when we see things in a church, we don't really stop and think about it because we want to think, you know, okay, Bobby's coming in late every day. Maybe he's just having some problems at home. He'll get through that. That's no problem. Or we see a secretary come into church with bruises on her face and she says, well, you know, I just fall down. I'm clumsy. but it happens over and over and over again. And so many things like that, we see red flags that maybe we should go to a senior leader and just say, you know what, I noticed this about Sue, I noticed this about Sam or Bob. Maybe we should have a conversation with them. It doesn't give us a right to become the behavior cop at church. We're not looking for things because false accusations can destroy lives. However, I do believe if we were just a little more aware, it's funny, Jeff, when I help a church navigate through a crisis, once we get to the other side, everything's, you know, back moving forward, I often will get the team together, the leadership team at the church together, and say, okay, knowing what you know now, when you look back over the last year or two, were there red flags you probably should have noticed? In almost every case, they say, oh, yeah, absolutely. Now I notice why Don was coming in late every morning, or now I know why Susan was leaving early every day. So I just think that if we could pay attention to some of these red flags, I'll give you a great example. A church, when I was writing the book, a church in Chicago had a couple of really alert ushers, and they're just moving around in the lobby, meeting and greeting people, and they notice that there's a new visitor that's really looking at the kids. I mean, he's really spending a lot of time watching kids. And so, you know, a red flag went up. So they went over, introduced themselves to this young man, and got his name and checked the database, and sure enough, he was a registered sex offender. So they pulled him aside to have that conversation about, okay, here's the restrictions. You're welcome to come to our church. We want you to get saved and, you know, transformed. However, we've got to have rules, just like the secular world has rules for sex offenders. You've got to stay away from kids. You've got to stay away from other activities. And so it all happened just because of some alert ushers. And what would have happened had they not noticed that? Who knows? So I'm just a big advocate that we should be more aware, pay attention, just train your team, train your ushers, train your staff to just be more alert about those kind of red flags.
Yeah, very good. Well, Phil, we had in the Dallas area, we had a slew of things hit just in a short period of time. The Robert Morris scandal that was just, this blew everybody's minds that this guy could think, I have this in my background, and yet I can get past it. You know, you mess around with a 12-year-old girl. You have two daughters. I have three daughters. You're lucky you're not dead or in prison. And yet he built this gigantic church. So I don't know if you were involved in the aftermath of that, but how would you assess how the church has handled that, Gateway Church, how they've handled that scandal?
Yeah, I was not involved in that. However, you know, it's really true. You can't, I tell you, the interesting thing is in this digital world, this social media world, we can't hide anymore. I think that the key thing is that, you know, I look at Google not as a search engine, but as reputation management. Because, you know, the vast river of information that flows into Google is really staggering. You know, that DUI you got in college that you thought everybody had forgotten about, that'll show up in a Google search. I actually had one pastor years ago tell me, Phil, it would probably be best if you didn't tell my congregation about my yacht. And I said, your yacht? I said, you're an idiot. You're an idiot. Number one, they can go on Google and download the title. And number two, if they have Google Earth, they can download a satellite photo of the boat sitting at the dock. You just can't hide like that anymore. So we need, if I would say anything to pastors and ministry leaders right now, is that we have to live transparent lives. We just have to live transparent lives. Even if you drive out of you drive out of your church office at the end of the day, you pull out in the street, somebody T-bones your car, you're going to get angry. You're going to jump out of the car and get mad at this guy. But the fact is, somebody's probably standing on the curb with their phone. We all carry cameras around in our pocket nowadays. So we just can't hide anymore. So we just have to be much more aware that we need to live transparent lives. We need to be honest. And my feeling is, whatever transgression you've had in your past, if you had, you know, sin and transgression or illegal activities, whatever, get it out front, because you're never going to be able to hide it in the world we live in today. So get it out front, work through that process, you know, deal with it. Then, you know, then think about ministry. And I think in many of these cases, these pastors that commit some of these serious issues, maybe we just need to take time off from ministry. Let's go work at Home Depot for a year or two. You know, so many guys want to just move down the street and start a new church a few blocks away.
Right.
And I just think that's devastating. So I think living transparent lives, being upfront, being honest is absolutely critical in this digital world we live in today.
Well, you have a chapter in the book, Does Keeping Quiet Help? You know, I was thinking about T.D. Jakes and the allegations that came against him, and it seems like they just kind of kept quiet. Tony Evans, they talked about it just in such vague terms, you didn't really know what he did. And then you fill in the gaps with that if they don't give you any information. Phil, what's your opinion on that? How should take Tony Evans Church or Tony Evans Church or T.D. Jakes' church? How should they have responded to those allegations?
Well, it's a really tricky situation because there are times when if there's no basis for it, if this is just wild, crazy criticism, and trust me, every pastor in America has critics. If you're doing, I feel like if you're really accomplishing God's purpose for your life, you're going to get critics out there. Sure. So there are times when just ignore it. I tell people a lot, if you're getting a critic on social media, I had a guy that ripped into me on social media the other day, just ripped into me about something I'd posted on my blog. And I looked at his followers, and I realized he only has 3 followers. So to respond to him would expose this guy to my 40,000 followers out there. And so Why in the world would I do that? So I just refused to respond to the guy. Probably made him more angry. So there is a time. However, that's a very kind of a rare case. I prefer to get the real story out. One thing I learned early on is, again, in the digital world, everything goes online. Everything gets put into the record forever. So if there's lies about you out there, maybe we should think about getting the true story out there and setting the record straight. So sometimes being quiet doesn't help. It's better to get the truth out, get it out there so people can see it. And because that, you know, whatever you publish online is going to be there forever. So it's very hard to stop the momentum of a ton of criticism without, you know, stepping up. Now, here's one thing to remember, Jeff. When I say speak the truth, you don't have to go into gory details. You know, if you've had a crisis at your church, say you had a youth leader that had a, you know, abusive relationship with a minor in your church. Number one, know that we have to report this to authorities now. There's no question about it. I know pastors that have been threatened with jail, even though they didn't do anything wrong, simply because they didn't report a sexual abuse situation in a church with a minor. So absolutely you have to do it. However, when you do go public and talk about things to the public or to your congregation, you know, number one, speak the truth. You don't have to go into all the gory details. You know, we don't want to make this a salacious kind of a drama, but do tell the truth according to what you know at the time. You know, these things unfold. We, you know, Robert Morris is a good example. When the story first broke, none of us really knew much of what was going on. We didn't know it was a 12-year-old girl. We just thought it was a young woman. And so you tell the truth according to what you know, and then as you know more, you want to tell that. So the bottom line is never cover anything up. You know, we think sometimes that, okay, we're going to lie about this or just not tell the truth or cover this up, thinking we're protecting the church or we're protecting somebody we love. No. It will always come back to bite you. Be honest, be upfront from the start, and be transparent.
Well, like with Robert Morris, Phil, that's a totally indefensible position. I mean, he got exposed, and then where do you go from there other than, hey, I need to resign? I mean, I would imagine if you were called in to consult with him when this first started, it would be like, hey, you have no option here other than to say, I have sinned and I'm out.
Absolutely. That's really true. It's tragic on both sides of the fence because it's tragic for this woman, you know, who was abused as a 12-year-old girl and has lived with that all these years. And it's tragic for this leader who started this amazing church, and now he's out of the ministry entirely. So I just think that you're exactly right. One of the things about my book is when I speak at conferences about it and pastor gatherings. I'm going to speak about it with a gathering of Salvation Army leaders in a couple weeks. And this is not happy stuff. This is not positive thinking or motivational stuff. It's very difficult. And yet we need to know this because the gospel's at stake. I mean, if 27%, that's a quarter of the people leaving the church today are leaving because of this, we need to get this right. So I do think it's vitally important that every church leader in America have this on their desk, which is a great reference.
Amen. Okay, you talk about the top six habits of pastors in trouble. Can you share those with us?
Sure. I noticed over the years when I was getting called into things, situations where the pastor had or the leader had fallen for a variety of reasons, I found six things, six behaviors that at least one or two of these were in play in this guy's life every single time. And those six habits are, number one, abusing alcohol and sleeping pills. You know, we think pastors don't drink, but, you know, a significant number of pastors do. And I don't think the Bible prohibits alcohol. I think it prohibits, obviously, drunkenness. And the problem with alcohol is it doesn't take much to get you pretty tipsy and drunk, and people do stupid things under the influence of alcohol. And I think sleeping pills are the same way. We've seen a number of recent situations where abuse of sleeping pills led to some pastors doing some really stupid things. So that's one. The second one is crude or sexualized jokes with their staff. I was actually at a church, a large, large church on the East Coast, and in the middle of a staff meeting, the pastor started joking about the color of underwear the women in the room were wearing. And he would say, "Betty, I bet you look like you wear pink panties. What do you think? Am I right? Are you wearing pink panties today?" I jerked the executive pastor out in the hallway, and I said, "What is going on in there?" And he said, "Oh, you know, the pastor's just a jokester. Everybody gets it. It's no problem." Well, guess what? It was a problem, because a month later, he was forced to step down because of a long-term adulterous relationship he had. So crude or sexualized jokes are a real, real red flag. They just have no business in the workplace at all. Mm-hmm. The third thing is too much time away from your spouse. I see an enormous number of pastors and leaders traveling the world, doing right. The great work of evangelism, but doing it by themselves. And I'll tell you, I'll go for a day trip, maybe a two-day trip without Kathleen, my wife. But if it's longer than that, I'm pretty much dragging her with me. I don't care. And I know there's spouses that don't like to travel and like to stay home with the grandkids, but I'll tell you, too much time away from the spouse is recurred over and over as a reason for some of these issues. Number four is a fascination with pornography. This is bigger in the church than we think. I know I've seen stories of pastors who are downloading porn on their office computer in their church office. So we need to have filters at churches and with the office team. We just need to be much more aware of the influence pornography has. Number five is what I call really stupid decisions. And a lot of pastors make them. I mean, who thought it was a good idea that Ravi Zacharias, one of the greatest apologists in the church today, should own a chain of massage parlors? Yes. I mean, who thought that was a good idea? Let's just rethink that. I know one pastor that he decided to be more productive, had his assistant move into his home with he and his wife. Mm. Well, guess where that ended up? Yeah. That didn't go well. So we just have to be on guard. And this is where I think this culture of transparency we talked about earlier is important. I want my team to feel perfectly free to pull me aside and say, "Phil, I think that was a really stupid decision. I think we should rethink that. You know, are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you want to say this?" You need a team around you that will help you with that. And then finally, number six is an environment where nobody questions the pastor or the leader's decisions.
Yeah.
And that's not often because the pastor is a dictator. It's often because the team respects the pastor. In the case where the pastor was guessing the underwear color of the women on his team, yeah. I looked around that room and realized most of the people in that room owed a great spiritual debt to that pastor.
Phil, I got to jump in here. We're up against a break. We're talking to Phil Cook. Church on Trial is the name of the book. Don't go away. We'll be back with more.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email PastorJeff@FromHisHeart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. We're talking to Phil Cook, media guru, author, producer, and founder of Cook Media Group, formerly in Burbank, California, right outside of Los Angeles, but now in Nashville, Tennessee. And the book is called Church on Trial, How to Protect Your Congregation, Mission, and Reputation During a Crisis. Okay, Phil, let me ask you this question. One of the things that bothered me a lot was how Willow Creek handled the situation with Bill Hybels some years ago. And I think what bothered me the most was Bill Hybels was considered by so many to be this leadership guru guy, pastor. Everybody went to him for his leadership books. His books sold like hotcakes. And when it came right down to it, he never stood up, faced the music, told the truth. He just kind of sailed away into the sunset, so to speak. Now, in shame, but he never took the stand that a leader should take. Tiger Woods did that. He went on national television and he owned his sin, and now he's got a great reputation in the world. How would you assess that, Willow Creek and Bill Hybels? How did they handle the scandal?
There's a couple things that went on there that were interesting to me. It was a prime case of circling the wagons around the leader. If you remember when the accusations first came out, the elder board, the staff, really protected Bill, and they really denounced the victim, the woman that brought up these charges, only to find out a few months later that she was exactly right. And it forced them to resign. They were humiliated. They were embarrassed. And so we need to be careful, even though we, in our heart of hearts, I was one that just, I was stunned by the news. And I thought, no, this couldn't possibly be Bill Hybels. This couldn't happen to him. And sure enough, it proved to be the case. And so we have to be very careful about circling the wagons and immediately protecting the leader. Certainly we love this leader. We've known him or her for years. We want to, you know, we think the best of them, but as the truth comes out, we have to think objectively. We have to be, you know, courageous and make the right decision here. So circling the wagons only made things worse, and it's caused, I think, the leadership team at that church has turned over two or three times since then. So it's been a really, really terrible case. As far as him not standing up and, you know, taking it, I think that you're exactly right. He just went off the radar. And I don't know Bill. I've never met him before. But he just completely disappeared and went off the radar and has not really responded to this at all. So, As I say, I don't know him, so I'm not sure all the inside stuff that went on there. But I do think that we have to be very, very careful about automatically protecting the leader and demeaning or discrediting the victim. Very often, it doesn't mean every victim is truth. You know, there's some victims that are lying, and I know a lot of leaders take a lot of criticism that's untrue, but we need to at least respect the victim because we don't know. We, at the early stage, my advice is take care, investigate both sides of the story deeply and respect the victim, respect the leader until we know the truth, and then start to make the right appropriate decision. So it can get really, really ugly, as it did in the case of Willow Creek.
Well, it's disheartening for sure when in the Christian community we don't seem to have as much integrity as the secular world. And so I go to Tiger Woods, and it took a lot of courage for Tiger Woods to do what he did, whenever that was, back in 2008 or something like that. Now, he's known throughout the world. Bill Hybels was known throughout the Christian community, not necessarily known throughout the world. But to me, he had a lot more integrity than Bill Hybels.
Yeah, we've seen a couple pastors recently that were considered leaders. You know, they were pastors to pastors, and they fell only to find out they weren't such great leaders at all. We discovered their church, you know, the case of in Mars Hill with Mark Driscoll. You know, he had, I think, seven campuses, and not one single campus was able to stay afloat. Not one single leader was able to step up and say, we're going to continue as a church. That just really shows you that that was not a leadership culture there. They were not training pastors and leaders to lead churches. It was all about Mark at the time. So it's always a challenge. And that's why I say, number one, you know, when you have a crisis, Jeff, call your attorney. Have a good attorney on speed dial because, you know, as I said, if a minor's involved, it has to be reported to authorities, and an attorney's going to know who to report to, and they're going to help guide you. However, I also encourage people to talk to a communication expert because a lot of this is how you tell the story. You know, you could be perfectly innocent, and yet if you don't tell the story well, you're going to crash and burn. It's going to have problems. So an attorney's job is to keep you out of jail, you know, if you go to court. However, I've seen churches that won their case in court but were trashed in the media in the process. So a good communication person can really tell you, do we need to release a statement? Should we talk to reporters? How do we communicate this to the congregation? When should we communicate it? All those questions regarding communication are just as important as many of the legal questions surrounding a crisis.
Phil, can you think of anything specific example of a church that wasn't really in the wrong, but they handled it so poorly that they were besmirched by it?
Well, I think that, you know, well, in many cases, Hillsong is a good example. There were a lot of things going wrong at that church, but they handled it very, very poorly, which just made it worse. You know, it's one thing Carl Lentz, the pastor of their New York church, was having, you know, an affair outside of his marriage, and they dismissed him. But then suddenly other things. I have a chapter in the book called, about dominoes falling. Really, it's a case where in PTL, if you remember, Jim and Tammy Baker was the same way at PTL. Once one thing gets exposed, suddenly you start seeing this whole trail of other things happening. So that's a really, really bad sign. And we have to be really careful of those kind of things because, as I said, you can't hide it anymore. We think we can so often, but we just can't hide it anymore.
You know, when I think about an organization handling things well, I think about Liberty University when you have your president, Jerry Jr., go off the rails. I mean, in just unbelievable, things that came out concerning him and his wife. Very, very shameful. And yet they didn't seem to lose momentum in the school and in really their face in the world. So comment on that, Phil. What did you think they did well, and what would you have done differently?
No, I think they dealt with it remarkably well. What surprises me is how do you go so long before you realize someone on one of your top leaders is behaving this way? That goes back to our red flag conversation.
Right.
At what point did somebody not say, whoa, you're having these parties, you're having these vacations, you're doing all this wild stuff. You know, maybe we need to tone that down a little bit or, you know, move you out. It surprises me so many churches and ministries wait so long. And I think a lot of it is, you know, and I know in Jerry's case, he was a brilliant fundraiser. He did some great fundraising for Liberty, so maybe that had something to do with it. In other cases, it's a respect issue with pastors. So, it always surprises me that we keep kicking the can down the road. Things are getting worse and worse and worse. And you know, it's like I always want to ask pastors who have had like long-term affairs, what was your end game? You know, how did you think you would get out of this? What was going on in your head? Probably nothing. But you know, what was going on in your head that made you think you could do this and successfully get out of it? Because you really just can't do it anymore.
Phil, you write in the book about the 27% of people that because of a scandal, they just walk away from God. And you have in every church, you have baby Christians or non-Christians that are, you know, they're in the thick of it, but they don't really have a personal relationship with Jesus. But something like that just causes them to throw in the towel. How do you personally, because you get to know churches and pastors on a very in-depth level, and so you see, hey, this guy's genuine, this guy's not so genuine. How do you, Phil Cook, not get jaded with church and with pastors?
You know, I always remind myself that I'm one step away from doing something stupid. You know, we're all fallible human beings, and we always have to be on guard. We have to be super careful, and we have to just be aware that any of us could fall to something at any time. We're tempted by money. We're tempted by sex. We're tempted by just all kind of stuff these days. And so I just remind myself that we all are, you know, are capable of great sin. I also think that God is bigger than whatever bonehead happens to be representing him at any given time, to be honest. I just think that, you know, I had a great conversation with a guy just the other day, and he had gone through a very difficult time, and he and his wife were really hurt by a church. And he said, I turned my back on church, but then I realized, wait a second, that church had 500 people in it. those 500 people didn't hurt me. I realized, really, it was three people in that church that hurt me. So why should I turn my back on the church because of three people in there? And so he said, it really made me aware that people that walk away from God don't understand that it's not the church, it's not God, it just happens to be somebody in that church that's doing something stupid. And tell me, what organization in America doesn't have people doing stupid things? Republican Party, Democratic Party, the Moose Lodge, the bowling league in your neighborhood. You know, there, any group, you name any group in America, they're going to have people doing stupid things. So we are human beings. We make mistakes. It doesn't excuse it by any means. But at the same time, it does make me realize God is bigger than this. God is so much bigger than this. He desires something so much better for us in our lives. So I'm not, in spite of the number of cases I've seen, I'm not turning my back on God or the church for a minute, because that's not the cause.
Phil, do you ever find yourself scratching your head saying, I don't understand why God is blessing, even from the outside, seeming to be blessing this guy and his ministry when I know him and he's not a guy that is, if we use the term, worthy of blessing. He's abusive. He's duplicitous. He's this, that, and the other. But when he gets on the platform, he seems to have people eating out of his hand. How do you reconcile that in your mind?
You know what? That's a great question, and I have really struggled with that, and I don't know the answer to that. You know, I just figure God knows something that I don't know about this situation, and I really don't know. I'm assuming that guy, that man or woman, will have to, you know, they'll be accountable to God at some point, and for what they're going through. And you're right, and people who are amazing Christians struggle with health problems or struggle with financial problems. And yet they're doing incredible. One of the things we get to do at our company, Cook Media Group, is we work with churches and ministry organizations around the world, helping them with media. And I get to travel a lot overseas. And I see ministries overseas that are just struggling but doing amazing, amazing work in the face of persecution, in the face of criticism, in the face of financial challenges. And I don't have the answer for why God blesses some and others seem to struggle so much. So if you figure it out, please let me know.
It's really strange, you know, and our calling before the Lord is to live, you know, in the light and walk in the light and not have a duplicitous life. And God handles the blessings. You know, it's up to him. We just need to be faithful. But it is kind of puzzling as we see. It's like, Lord, why are you using? And let's face it, Driscoll was used maybe negatively in some instances, but also positively. James McDonald, the same way. Robert Morris, God seemed to use him, even though he had that, I mean, just this indefensible transgression in his life that is disqualifying. It is puzzling.
Yeah. But it is puzzling, and no question about it.
Well, the book is called Church on Trial, How to Protect Your Congregation, Mission, and Reputation During a Crisis. And so, Phil, we have about another 2 minutes left. Who should get a copy of this book?
Well, I tell you what, the best thing you could do if you're a church member is to get a copy for your pastor. In fact, I've had a number of pastors order a box of books because they want to give it to all their elders. They want to give it to their staff members. So you can certainly go to our blog at philcook.com. I'm Cook with an E, and COOKE, philcook.com, and you can see some information there about how to order it in bulk. But I do believe that every pastor, elder, leader, staff member in America needs to have this book, because this information is so incredibly important. And I think it'll open us up, open our eyes to see some of the red flags that happen out there, so we can nip these things in the bud, if you will, and stop them long before they destroy lives.
Amen. Amen. Church on Trial, How to Protect Your Congregation, Mission, and Reputation During a Crisis. Phil, this has been an enjoyable hour. I appreciate you so much, my friend, and I pray God's blessings on your ministry. I look forward to seeing you. We're going to be in Dallas at the NRB come next
great.
Year, so that'll be fun.
Fantastic. Thank you.
All right, brother. God bless you. Well, thanks for listening to Real Truth for today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here, and always a joy to get to talk to Phil Cook. He's very real, and Phil is always kind to people. I appreciate that. I really put a huge amount of weight on how does a leader treat other people, especially people that would serve him as a wait staff or somebody at a hotel or somebody that's down the chain, maybe at a church. You always want to treat people with kindness, with respect, with love, because that's how Jesus treated people. So go out this day, this weekend, shine for Christ and share what great things the Lord has done for you, and know that God will use you as his witness. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.